It's a long time that God's been working in my life. I found that most things that are worth having generally take some time and some work. It's going to be very difficult. So, just about everything else in worth is in life, as I was saying, is in building our character and our hearts and our betterment's never an easy road. It takes time. In about 2005, I was going through an end of a relationship, and I fell into a very deep depression. For the first time in my life. And I didn't do anything for about 4 months. Sat on my shower, sat on my sofa, pardon me, slept for 18 hours a day, and drank too much. And at some point in the relationship that I'd had with that person, she left me a book for my birthday. And
it's all right. We're good.
I don't know if I'm gonna be able to do it. So I cracked open the book. It was a book that my now ex had left me. It was called The Purpose Driven Life. And one day in the depths of my depression and despair, I opened it up. Mm-hmm. Read the whole thing in 2 days.
Yeah.
And then I read it again.
Uh-huh.
And I'm off script here. Sorry. You know, the funny thing is, I started writing this about a month ago. And at 27 pages, I decided I needed to rework it completely. It was way too much about me and my background and the cars I stole and the people I hurt and the crimes I committed. But I decided I needed to boil it down. And this is my best effort. I got it down to about 3 pages. So, any rate, so I'm going to try my best. It's going to get tough. So she gave me this book. I opened it up, and it spoke to me. I read the entire thing, and suddenly I started feeling quite a bit better. I hadn't left my sofa for months, and I was quickly going quite broke. Didn't have any money left because I wasn't working. And so I had hit rock bottom, like truly rock bottom. And as the saying goes, sometimes you don't realize God's all you need until God's all you got, as they say. At the insistence of a close friend of mine, I went and spoke to a counselor, put me on some medication, and I began to feel better almost immediately. But I started praying for the first time in my life, like really praying. No these and thous, like I'm scared, I'm worried, I'm going to lose my house, I don't know what I'm going to do. And so had about $35 to my name, and just kept reading that book. And I took the medication, and I started feeling better in no time flat. I was back to my fun-loving, gregarious self, and I started working hard. I was trying to catch back up. I was trying to catch back up to get some semblance of order in my life, but I just kept praying. I just told God straight up what I was suffering with. And after a few months, I didn't need those white pills anymore. And it's going to be so hard.
You're good. Take
the time.
You're
all right. So in 2010, there was a neighborhood meeting about security. There'd been a kidnapping at the Target, and people were scared. They were really scared. So I came down here to this church in this room, and I talked to some people, and I left with a smile on my face for the first time in a long time.
All right.
And in the process, I met a man who, in many ways, changed the trajectory of my life. And one gentleman in particular, I'd stroken up a conversation with. I kept having conversations with. Thank you. Very interesting person. He was. He used a walker, and come to find out, he was 98 years old. And some of the things that he told me about with his life. His experiences gave me some perspective. Gave me some perspective. Right there he sat. And he gave me perspective because despite having every reason to be angry, the world, the smile never left his face. And so I continued spending time with that man. Every week, we'd have a lunch together, talk on the phone, and sit in his apartment and just talk. And he gave me a lot of perspective. He told me about books I needed to reread in the Bible. He'd say, "You need to go read Proverbs today." And so I ended up spending a lot of time with him. Got to celebrate his 100th birthday with him. And he kept me coming back to church to see him every week. And in the process, I met people that I consider friends and neighbors. And I felt welcome for the first time in my life at a church because I grew up going to church, but it was big churches. So big churches, lots of these and thous and suits and ties and all that kind of thing. And that's not really my speed. So I've completely gotten off script here. So anyway, I was raised in a Christian home, but I hadn't gone since I left home at 16. I hadn't gone to a church on my own willingness unless it was a wedding or a funeral, right? And so I started coming down here to this church, and I met a lot of people that I've really got a lot out of, that taught me a lot. And I think it was because there was neighbors involved. I had already lived in Edgewood at that point for more than a decade. And so met a lot of people that I felt familiar with and welcomed with. And so I continued my journey with this man, talking to him and spending time with him, talking on the phone and going out to eat. And we would sit in his apartment after church and talk. And the things, like as I mentioned before, that he endured as his youth that were literally unimaginable to me. But he was the first of a lot of very, very good relationships that I've formed here. And I think what it boils down to is this is a God story. It's about what God's doing in my life. So that's kind of the backstory that I can't even get through. But it's five things in particular. And number one, he showed me how to forgive people that really hurt me.
Yeah.
My father is one. Help me to let go of the things I don't have control over. Because it's all of it I don't have control over. That's a big one. When you realize that you can let go of the things that worry us the most tend to be things we have zero control over.
That's it.
Right. It's nonsense. It's insanity. So he's given me a perspective to see other people's point of views, what they're, where they're coming from. As my mom used to say, you got to love them where they are. And it's allowed me to worry so much less. Worry is experiencing failure in advance, and it's usually not very accurate at all. He's made me much more generous, less stingy, less worried about me and this and mine and all of that. So I could go on for hours, but I've massacred my script here, and That's the gist of it. But it starts right here in this room with these people, with all of you guys. And I can't thank you enough.
God's good.
Hi, I'm Jen. My God story today is about changing my perspective. So when Joy first reached out to me about doing a God story, my immediate reaction was, no, I don't have a God story. I've had God at arm's length for 12 years, but I did what I always do. I asked Ben his opinion, and he helped me realize that maybe there was a little bit more to it than that. You know, I practiced this a lot, and I was, like, really cool. Not cool anymore. So my mom died 12 years ago, and she was sick for a really long time. She was the most wonderful and most beautifully faithful woman I've ever known. And it didn't seem to matter that we prayed all the time for her healing. All I knew since I was 8 years old and she was first diagnosed was that God, this judge, sat on his throne and deemed that all of this was okay. It felt like he was this powerful figure who could just fix things, right? But wouldn't. That despite the fact that she was otherwise healthy, an amazing teacher who was so passionate about helping kids learn to read, the best mom and the most loyal friend, that she didn't get to keep living. That plenty of people who didn't care about others, didn't take care of themselves, didn't even care about God, got to have long, full lives, and she didn't.
Not right. Not right.
And he was okay with that. He deemed it so. And so when I was 22 and we said goodbye, I could not forgive God for making that choice. And I kept my distance for a while. A wonderful thing about Edgewood is that it is the most open-minded church I've ever been to. Just a few weeks ago, Joy was telling us how everyone is welcome here. We don't have to believe the same things. We don't have to use the same words for everything. And I started to realize that maybe I hadn't actually been so separated from God. Maybe I was just calling him something else. When I met Ben, he had this wonderful mantra, the universe is on our side. He's a little bit of a hippie. But I quickly adopted it as well. It felt right. It didn't mean that bad things were never going to happen, that we weren't going to go through any struggles or challenges, but to remember that despite those things, it was going to work out. We would get to the other side. You will not forever be in that bad place. It's about having a chance for hope, for being able to stay optimistic in the face of difficulty, knowing that the universe, literally all of this space around us, was full of good energy. We still have personal responsibility in everything. We get to choose how we respond to what's been brought to us. So it's something we say a lot in our family. And with the benefit of hindsight on so many different challenges through the years, we've seen the truth of it. Something that was bad or hard presented itself, and then through a series of small connections or random occurrences, and with the gift of time and teamwork, we got through it. The bad does not last forever. The universe is on our side. And I'd like to share with you what that has looked like for me. None of the women in my family have lived to their mid-50s. They haven't ever met their grandchildren. It had first been recommended to me to get genetic testing when I was in my early 20s. I just lost my mom, and my doctor thought that there was a strong chance that there was a genetic component to our family history. And at the time, I said, no way. I felt like it would be getting a death sentence. Finding out that I was predisposed to breast and ovarian cancer, knowing that the same thing that killed the women in my family was going to come for me too, no thanks. I will live in blissful ignorance for now. But when Ben and I got married and moved to Atlanta, I had a new doctor, the benefit of a little more maturity in my grief, and the realization that I had a lot more to live for than I had realized. So I got genetic testing, and it confirmed that I have the BRCA genetic mutation. In a very casual conversation with someone who worked with a young survivors of breast cancer group, she mentioned a support group for those with the BRCA mutation. So I nodded, thanked her for the information, and promptly forgot about it. In the meantime, I started my first surveillance treatment with my new doctor. This basically means that for someone with this type of predisposition, you get monitored a lot. So I had my first mammogram at 29, and they saw something. So then I had an MRI, which led to an ultrasound and eventually a biopsy. And while the growth that they found was not malignant, it was enough motivation for Ben and I to decide to start our family. We learned that it was better to be done having kids by the time I was 35 so that more advanced protective measures could be taken. Our son Cal was born within the year. I try not to dwell on the idea too much because it freaks me out a little bit, but I'm constantly in awe of the fact that this incredible kid exists because of all of this. We may have waited another few years before thinking about our family, and those kids wouldn't be the kids I have now. So somehow the name of that support group floated back into my consciousness after Cal was born, and I decided to look it up. I really love the idea of being able to meet with other people who were experiencing this very specific thing and could understand the complexity of it. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the Atlanta group met way far away, like Roswell or Sandy Springs or one of those places, and I don't know, I have my city bubble. But for mom of an infant, a Thursday night at a Taco Mac 20 miles away was not going to happen. I don't know if you guys heard, but there was this pandemic that shut a lot of things down. So the meeting stopped happening anyway. But the beautiful silver lining of this was that everything went virtual and I could finally join in with the group. So the second video call that I was able to attend happened to be a Q&A with two leading physicians in the space, a breast surgeon and a plastic surgeon, and they discussed all of the preventive surgeries that are available to people like me. This was one of the most valuable conversations I've ever had in my life. I hadn't been presented with most of this information before. I didn't know that some of these options were available. The fact that I was able to join that call that night was life-shifting. That call was also the last one the Atlanta group ever had. The leaders for the area just got really busy, you know, life, and it hasn't come together again. So not to get too medical on you, but for people who have these genetic factors, preventive surgeries are generally recommended and covered by insurance because the cost of one or two surgeries, yeah, is far less than the potential cost of cancer treatment. So a preventive or prophylactic mastectomy is a common choice because if you don't have breast tissue, it's highly unlikely you could get breast cancer. So from that call, I got the information I needed to choose the type of surgery that was best for me. It's called a deep flap, and I would have completely missed that opportunity if I hadn't been a part of that conversation. So after our second son, Rowan, was born, and we decided we had completed our family, I called up both of the doctors who had been in that Q&A, and they became my surgeons. I didn't know at the time that they were among the top physicians performing these surgeries in the country. All right. That my plastic surgeon specifically is a pioneer in the deep procedure. And last August, they beautifully performed the surgery that took breast cancer off the table for me.
Hallelujah.
And now I'm the healthiest I've ever been. Yeah. That feels nice. So in January, a couple months, I'll have my last preventive surgery with a doctor that I really love. It's a preventive, get ready for this, hysterectomy, salpingectomy, oophorectomy, which removes the uterus, fallopian tubes, and ovaries. While I can't say I'm looking forward to it, I can actually already feel like the impending sense of relief knowing that ovarian cancer, which is what my mom was diagnosed with at age 40, can't come for me.
Yep.
And so I know the universe is on my side because I couldn't have made that all happen on my own. Each piece of this health journey, this path to longevity, happened in such an unpredictable way that I have to know that someone was conspiring in my favor. Mm-hmm. A group name casually dropped and forgotten popped back up. The chance to meet with the incredible surgeons could have very easily never taken place. Yeah. The odds were not in my favor to make any meetings, and I got to be a part of the only one that really mattered.
Yeah.
That I moved to Atlanta 8 years ago, not having a clue about any of this stuff, but putting me in the proximity of the most incredible team of doctors. All of these little pieces came together. And it's not because there was a God playing a chess match with my life,
right?
Because there's a loser in chess. And I realized that God is never playing against me. Our friend William Riley, who was an interim pastor here at Edgewood a few years ago, once asked me a perspective shifting question. He knew that I was wrestling with God, that I hadn't forgiven him. And William asked me if I could ask God why, and receive a direct answer. Is there any answer that would make it better? And I had never thought of it like that. It's like I'd been sitting around waiting for enlightenment, waiting for that elusive reason that people really love to tell you everything happens for. And I realized there was never going to be an answer that made me feel better about losing my mom.
Right.
But that I didn't have to lose myself while waiting for it. That I could acknowledge that this sucks. That I'll miss her every day. But that I'm not still in that bad place. That I've been given a much more optimistic future. Because the universe is on my side. The end.